April, I believe.
And so this is kind of like his first big project outside of school. And kudos to Robert, because that's really hard to do.
It is. It is. It's and then just to go on a slight tangent here, you know, I forget what the statistics are, but for those people coming out of art school, your chances of going on and continuing on a career in the arts, are very, very slim. It's kind of like winning the lottery if you can do it. So, yes, congratulations to Robert.
Yeah, a lot of people out of art school are usually like me, where you've got some job that's vaguely related to the arts.
Well, actually, or more often than not, you're like, you know,
or like your friend from the States who's got a job in the IT department at a plastics
company. Exactly. It has nothing to do with art.
Anyway, I wanted to say good morning and hello to Robert, because he might be listening to us.
Yeah.
While he's busy installing over at Neutral Ground, because Lisa Streifler has a show that's opening this week.
That's right.
At Neutral Ground, and it's called Contained.
Contained. Okay.
And it's actually, it's a show that she had up in Ottawa, and Neutral Ground had some space, so they're just putting this show up really quickly. And I think she made three new works for the Neutral Ground show. That opens, is it Thursday night?
I'm not sure. But I guess before we get too caught up in Lisa Streifler's work, we should go back to Robert Boss's work.
Absolutely. No, Lisa's opens on Saturday at 7.
Yeah. So again, we'll go through those listings again, but it was weird because for a while there was a long dry spell when nothing was really happening, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, and then this week there's like three different things happening.
Yeah, so you know, get your party hats on, because there's a lot to do this weekend.
Now, part of what you can do is actually going down to Robert's gallery and seeing his work and participating in his project.
Yeah.
He's got, what, 5 or 6 suits hanging on the walls?
I think he's got 6 suits.
So it's like a storefront place, right, mm-hmm. that he's rented, and a little strip mall in a residential neighborhood. And then he's painted the space white, because that signifies a gallery.
Exactly. He's sending out all the signal flares are going out.
And it's great, because he's got full glass, right? So you can see right in on the street and see what takes place in this room. And then he's got like a little changing room, and he's got these suits, and he invites you to come in and try on a suit and get your picture taken.
Exactly. And even better, you know, if you like the suit, you can buy the suit at the end.
Yeah. The suits are on the small side, so I mean, they fit Phil rather well.
Hey. Thanks.
Which takes us right to our topic about this. You know, I was just thinking about masculinity and how, you know, it was insulting to call you small.
And yet she does it twice.
And yet, you know, if you said it to me, it would be like a compliment, because it's nice to be feminine and small if
that's
you're a
right.
woman.
That's right. And I'm not going to help you out there. At any rate, so what originally intrigued me a lot about this exhibition was the idea of the possibility of engaging in a conversation with masculinity, around topics of masculinity, with, because that's one of my little
areas of expertise, yes, or interest.
Both. with another artist, and see how they have chosen to engage with it. And you know, it's funny, because the same topics always seem to come up when you start talking about masculine objects. The first one is the suit and its metonymic representation for masculinity.
Now, metonymic is one of your favorite words, and it means something that stands in for something.
Yeah,
it's, you know, like, it's, if you would rise to address the chair, you're talking to a person, not an object. That the word chair,
yes,
signifies the office or something.
Right. Yeah.
Slowly there.
Yeah. So the best example I can always think of is a flag is a metonymic representation of a country.
Excellent. So the suit is a metonymic representation of
masculinity.
Okay. So going to the office, bringing home the bacon.
Right. And a particular kind of masculinity there, a middle class masculinity.
Right, because these aren't suits that were tailored.
No, they're not. They're obviously,
these are like, you know, Moore's suits. Although one suit's from Germany, because Robert's dad came from Germany.
Yes, but
and these are Robert's dad's suits.
Yeah, but they're obviously not like Armani silk suits. You know,
no, that's
like
true.
They're all like wool or I don't know, whatever
material. Polyblend.
Yeah, or tweed or whatever it is that that they're made out of. And so they're obviously suits that that some sort of middle class male would use on a regular basis.
Yeah, none of them are really high fashion either.
No.
You know,
no.
There's no zoot suit.
That's right.
That you would wear and go, wow, you're wearing that suit again.
Yes.
They're all, because that's the nice thing about guys' suits is, like, for the most part, the middle class suit is fairly anonymous, and you could probably wear it every day of the week and not have anyone comment on it.
Exactly. It's an innocuous metonym.
That all right.
That was a lot of words. Sorry.
A lot of syllables. Yeah. Two words.
But it's like you said, like it's a representation of masculinity, but it's one that is so common and so daily that we don't see it anymore. We just sort of accept it for what it is,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is what I was trying to explain in that syllable blast. But nonetheless, when I saw the invitation, because it has, like, you know,
five suits
hanging on it, I thought, great, here we have an opportunity to really sort of examine the idea of the suit.
Right, and Robert actually said that most of the people who have come out to his gallery so far, and they're all represented on the wall by the photographs that he's taken of
right.
people, he's hung on the wall in a really sort of organic, well, it's a grid, but
right.
he's sort of hung it up in order of appearance of people.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them are his friends, who happen to be young white guys.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are people that are interested in the suit, who happens to be young white guys. I think there's, what, two women on the wall?
Yeah.
And his...
No, there's three. There's three.
There are
yeah.
three?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's one baby so far.
Yeah.
And I think two... Like, he's had a couple people off the street.
Yeah.
That are, you know, part of the art circle.
Yeah. I think we should describe the show. We're getting ahead of ourselves a bit here. And
sure, go ahead.
it's a very simple idea. It's a white room. Not a very big white room, but a white room nonetheless, with windows leading out onto the street. Hanging along one wall are five suits. And they're all sort of hung up on these wooden hangers with these brass hooks. So they look, you know, fairly nice hanging there on the wall. On the other side, there is another suit hanging by itself, and that's the German suit that Margaret mentioned just a minute ago. And right next to it is a white changing room. So the changing room is kind of invisible. Inside the changing room, there is a wooden coat rack.
With metal hooks.
With metal hooks, right?
As you would expect to find in any change room.
Exactly. but that particular coat rack has some special sort of significance to Robert that we...
It's kind of an inside art joke thing.
Yeah, it is an inside art joke thing for sure. But, I mean, it resonates with some sort of meaning there. And in the middle of the space, against the white wall of the change room, there is a little piece of green tape on the floor. And across from it, there's a camera with a tripod. And then on the wall next to the camera, there is and it's like a big circle that's starting to develop. There are photographs of people who are wearing one of the suits. And continuing on into the gallery, there's like a narrow little hallway with a bookshelf on it and a desk there. And on it, there's a variety of books. And all the books have to do with either Duchamp or Joseph Beuys.
Who are the people that Robert feels pertain sort of the art historical antecedents to his work here?
Yeah, that's exactly true. So the coat hook that I was talking about earlier is actually a direct quote of a Marcel Duchamp ready-made object. And now a ready-made object is?
Well, it's something that Duchamp could have bought off the street in Paris and put into a gallery and signed his name on it. The most famous one, of course, is the urinal,
right,
which he signed Armat in 1917.
Yeah.
And he entitled it The Fountain, that
right.
he would, you know, take the urinal out of the bathroom and stick it into the art gallery, and then people could appreciate its porcelain beauty.
Right.
Or, you know, have a good laugh. Because Duchamp was a bit like that.
Yeah, well, and Duchamp is all about challenging the gallery.
Yeah, and so the idea is, like, does it become art as soon as it comes into the gallery and when I sign it?
Right.
Does the value immediately go up?
And the corollary to that is...
Yes.
No, the corollary to that is, does an artist make art just by pointing at something and saying it's art?
And that's been the big question of the 20th century.
Yeah, you know, so like what empowers you to do that? And some people say, oh, I have every power to do that. And other people will say, no, I cannot do that. You know, you have to do something special to it first. Or, you know, there are all these sort of codicils that can go next to it. But at any rate, so Duchamp brought in this idea of the ready-made. So you could go to a hardware store or a general store and buy something and then bring it into the gallery and represent it, and then it becomes like an art object all on its own.
Yeah, he had like the bottle rack. There's a wine bottle drawing rack that's quite beautiful as a sort of minimal object. And he had like the bicycle.
A bicycle wheel.
Bicycle wheel was another one. And then also he got into the whole idea of like selling, right? Because you have multiples where he would say, okay, well, here are like 10 bottle racks and I'll sign them, and then people can buy them as a sacred art object.
Right. So what the coat rack was one of those objects, right?
Right.
But Robert is seeking to make a further extension into this, like, and he's saying that, or he was saying that...
Well, he did some research on Duchamp and found out that Duchamp at some point, and I don't have the exact quote, said that you should be able to take an art object out of the gallery and turn it back into an ordinary object.
Right.
And so I think Robert was trying to do that with Duchamp's ready-made coat rack.
Right.
Taking it out of Duchamp's gallery and putting it into the change room. Making it into a coat rack.
And making it back. And so that's the quote that he's making.
But it's inside of a gallery, so it's still an art thing.
Maybe, maybe not, you know, because it's still like it's in the change room and it has a specific function.
That's right.
Right. So when we talk about the difference of what is an art object and what is not an art object, usually function comes up as a topic.
Yeah.
Does it function outside of the parameters of art in any way? And this coat rack still functions as a coat rack.
Well, see, and there's that funny slipping back and forth within Robert's piece, because he was talking about sometimes when he's like, and I've done this before, when you're working inside of a gallery and you're waiting for people to come in and interact with you, you're kind of trying to hope to like invite people in.
Yeah.
And he does like with all the suits on the walls, he feels a bit like a suit salesman.
Yeah.
He's trying to sell people on the notion of coming in, trying on a suit and participating. So like in some ways he's feeling a bit like a retail environment, and
right.
other ways he's an artist.
Right.
So there's that slipping back and forth between the two worlds.
But I want to get into the idea of the ready made and the suit, right? Because I think that
like, well, tell us about the suit, Phil. What is the connection between Robert's suits and Joseph Beuys, for example?
Oh, well, that's a longer conversation that will take more than the amount of time we have left here. But, okay, Joseph Beuys in 1917 came up with a multiple. Sorry, not 1917.
I was going to say 1970.
1970, yeah. Came up with a multiple called the felt suit. And the felt suit is it's a regular suit. It looks like a regular everyday suit, but it's made entirely out of felt, as one would expect with the title felt suit.
And it was felted to fit his body precisely.
Exactly. It is modeled on his body, and in fact he has worn it long enough that he wore them long enough that they started to adapt themselves to his body. So all the curves and the way his shoulders hang and blah blah blah.
Well, by 1970 he was an old guy, right?
No, he wasn't that old. But there's an echo of his body within the suit.
Okay.
And so if you were to take the suit off, like he made like 100 of them or something, if you were to take the suit off its hanger and put it on, you could feel Joseph Beuys' body.
Well, the way that the suit doesn't fit you would tell you how Joseph's body
Joseph
differs from yours.
Joseph Beuys' body differs, yes. And so there's immediately some sort of relationships that start to happen between Joseph Beuys as an archetype, which is just sort of like a larger symbol, and your own sense of your own body, right?
Now the other bizarre thing is that the felt suit had no buttons.
Exactly, it had no buttons, and in European prisons at that time, it was common to give the convicts suits. And the suits would have no buttons so that they couldn't...
swallow the buttons or choke themselves to death.
Or whatever, right?
So, trade the buttons for cigarettes.
Exactly. So in effect, you had these, like, buttonless suits that...
Now, I like the whole idea of the convict and the suit, that, you know, you put on the suit and you're the... the prisoner of whatever the suit represents.
Yeah.
You know, going to the office, being dad, whatever.
Yeah, and so that's like that's the first layer of interpretation that we can get into with this idea of the felt suit, is that, you know, the suit itself is talking about masculinity as some sort of anxiety, right? And some sort of challenge to the ego of the person wearing it. It like a prison. Right. And that, you know,
some people find it empowering that you can put the suit on and instantly you are that person.
Yeah. But then you're sort of, it's
power suit.
It's weird. Right. Cause okay. So this is like a longer discussion about masculinity as well, but there's power that goes with it, but power at the same time can carry a lot of anxiety with it, particularly when there are different pulls on the way that power needs to be used.
I want to say cry me a river.
You go. Doh.
Oh, I feel so anxious about the power ranking wheels. Hello, I'm George Bush, and I'm having a little bit of anxiety about being the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah, well, but, okay.
But see, but the thing I liked about this was that you talked about Robert's suits being middle class, right? And so that in some ways there's a role you have to fill.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Other ways, yeah, you don't have all the power
in the world. I'm not talking about aristocratic power. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about a different sense that is sort of caught up in the middle class and the way that they have to try to fulfill an ideal that is expressed within sort of an upper class aristocratic form of power, but they can never achieve.
Now, I wanted to point out that these aren't Robert's mom's dresses on the wall.
No.
And that putting on a dress is a whole other thing.
Yes.
And I think that whole notion, if you could imagine walking in and putting on one of Robert's mom's dresses and how different that is from putting on his dad's suit, I think that you'll start to see the power difference between the
exactly.
masculine and the feminine within this society.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, it could be empowering for me to put on the suit jacket, but if it was Rob's mom's dress and you put it on, would you feel empowered?
Oh.
Very few guys would.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people
who would. Yeah,
right?
yeah. No. There's people out there who, you know, the world always spins on a slightly different axis.
Well, no, because some people feel they can relax and they don't have to live
and
up to this suit,
yeah,
right? That they can put on the feminine
but that's,
apparel
that's
and
what
relax
I'm saying.
In the powerless role.
That's exactly what I'm saying, right? Is that, you know, we can only speak in generalities here, and we're using broad brushstrokes, and we talk about power and middle class men and blah blah blah. But you know, there are always exceptions within that, and there are always people who will challenge that sort of those very established, you know, middle of the road notions, just through their very existence, because they can feel empowered wearing a dress, or you know, they don't need to they've gone through life trying not to wear the suit, you know, blah blah blah, right? Like there are all these little things that people do every day to try to negotiate that that power and the anxiety around that power.
Yeah, I loved what Salma Hayek said about Frida in the movie Frida, that Frida Kahlo wore like really feminine bright clothing and really, you know, got into her beauty that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that for her, that was very empowering, that she was very comfortable with her beauty and her feminine sense and would wear these clothes.
Right.
But then there's moments too where Frida puts on the suit. You know, there's that whole fight she has with Diego, and she cuts off her hair and wears the suit because she's been betrayed by him emotionally.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of, you know.
And it's impossible to say why she chose the suit to do that. I mean, we could speculate, but without, you know, sitting down with Frida and sort of talking about it, you know, openly for a long time, we could not say exactly why. But you know, it all comes back down to the idea of that metonymic representation of masculinity, which we associate with power.
Right, that somehow being betrayed by her male lover, she then takes the power back, putting the suit on.
Exactly.
And I think the portrait they represent in the film is her in the suit with the cut hair, holding the hands of her in the dress with the long hair.
Right, yeah.
That
yeah.
somehow the masculine and the feminine are coming together within one person.
Yes, yeah. And so,
which, as we cannot, you know, fail to stress, is true for everybody, right? There's masculine and feminine
exactly.
in every person.
Yeah, yeah. And so, well, I, yes. I would more or less agree.
Well, yeah, because when we're talking about masculine and feminine, we're not talking about men and women. We're talking about masculine and feminine.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And definitely.
Social.
Yeah, and we can talk about, you know, phallic senses of power and how that.
And gynic senses of power.
Yes.
It took me 15 years to learn that word.
But those things are not exclusive to someone who is sexed male or sexed female, right?
They
exist within the person who is sexed either way, regardless of that. And then
your gender and your role in society
can
be two different things.
Right. And your gender is sort of formulated on which sense of power you have more affiliation with.
Cool. Yeah. I feel like we broke new ground. How much time do we have left?
About 7 more minutes.
Wow. So, Phil, you put on the suit and you put on the pants.
I did. I put on. Now, hold on. Wait a second. Before we get that far, though, we have to say some more about the suits, because the suits they're kind of ready-mades, right, in that they've sort of fallen into Robert's life. But the way they fell into Robert's life is what I...
Because his dad fell out of his life.
Yeah.
To put it really, you know... Weirdly,
yeah,
his father died, and then he was like, as a grieving person,
right,
thinking, well, what the heck are we going to do with the suits?
Yeah, so these are his father's old suits, and his father
was very young, like he died at the age of 51,
which
is
very
bizarre
young.
And ridiculous for someone who's completely healthy. I mean, these suits are not the suits of an overweight man who smoked.
No, like they barely fit me.
let's again stress how small.
Thank you.
The suit jackets actually fit me, and I'm probably like a size small to medium torso.
Right.
But the sleeves were way too short. Yeah. Like I had about 4 inches of arms to get the sleeve.
Yeah, I had a bit more room in there, but not that much more.
Yeah.
But at any rate, what we...
So then, like, what we were asking Rob is, how do these suits... Like, they're not really ready-made. He hasn't bought them off the rack.
Right.
There's an emotional investment there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of personal meaning that's in these
exactly
suits.
Yeah, and so then I went back to boys, thinking about that, because boys' felt for boys, and this is a long history with boys, so I'm just gonna say it and then let you figure it out. When if you're really interested, you can go read about this, but boys sort of came up with a history for himself, and part of his history was involved the notion of felt as a healing fabric that could be wrapped around a person and give them back a sense of themselves. So by constructing the suit out of felt, he's extending that notion even further.
So he's making a healing garment.
He's making a healing garment, and it has no buttons.
Well, I suppose there are no buttons on your little hospital robe either, right?
Exactly. You know, so like there's nothing impeding you. Like it's open. It's open. And it allows you to breathe, and it allows you to be there. So.
Oh yeah, I suppose like guys' suit buttons. If you try to do all the buttons on the vest, it can kind of pinch your gut a bit.
It can be a little tight. Yeah.
A bit gauche as well.
So at any rate, so you know, if we extend this idea of the suit as a healing metaphor as well, particularly in the boys' sense of the felt suit, and put that into the notion of the suit that Robert Boss has in his gallery, then you know he can start to talk about the way that his father, you know, there's that masculine symbol again, the way his father sort of left his life and what that means. And so that's the discussion.
You know, trying to fill that suit.
Yeah.
Or maybe trying to heal whatever emotional places.
Or even trying just to see how he fits into that suit. You know, because there are pictures of him wearing the suit in the gallery.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because he's putting on the suit and trying it on. And you would think that, you know, genetically you often have a very great similarity to your parents.
Right.
Physically.
Yeah, but your body is still different, right?
Absolutely.
And he could still feel that in the echo of the body that's in the suit, right? So there's lots of parallels, I think, that start to happen between this and the sort of very art historical suit, which is the boy's felt suit.
Well, we asked Robert if this action that he was performing was therapy, and I think it came out that therapy is kind of a dirty word in the art world.
Yes.
People, when you say, are you doing this for therapy? Maybe it's just, you know, that people in our society are distrustful of therapy still.
Yeah, yeah.
After 30 years or 60 years, or actually when Freud was practicing in the 30s, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like it's been nearly 100 years of psychoanalysis and people are still leery of it.
70 years, yeah.
My math is, creative. But there were people performing psychoanalysis before Freud.
Yeah.
If I can point that out.
Yeah.
Just to save my mouth a little. my point was, though, that there are other words that people use often in their work.
Right.
And they describe the work that they do as cathartic, or it's subconscious, or, they're getting in touch with something that they're working on, intuition, or, they're expressing something emotionally.
Or I just said healing.
Healing, exactly.
It's the same thing, right?
They're all really positive words.
Yeah, and so...
And I think that, Robert also said that when he's in the middle of an artwork, he doesn't really know what its significance is.
Mm-hmm.
And I find in my own art practice, that's very true.
Yeah.
That you can be doing something and you don't really know exactly why or how. And then later on, you can look back and reflect and say, I can see how this fits into the practice.
Right, right. So in the end, we both tried on the suit and a particular suit. You tried on a different one than I did.
Yeah, I picked out a blue sports jacket.
Yeah, and I think I went with a gray, charcoal gray suit.
You had a bit of a gray suit with some brown pinstriping, which went very well with your shirt, I thought.
I think so, yeah, it looked nice. But
was it weird to put on the pants?
No, not any more so than to put on the jacket itself.
Okay.
Because
Robert said a lot of people aren't trying on the pants.
Right, I think that's part of our, Victorian sense of society,
You want to take your pants off in public.
Exactly.
But Phil's always ready to do that.
Yeah, so whatever. Just did it.
I actually checked my hip size against the trousers and I felt that I just wasn't going to fit.
No, that's probably true.
So
yeah.
I'd like to say that, it was more of a body conscious thing.
Yeah, no, I was just my hips are a little slimmer than yours, so that's fine.
It's all that smoking you do.
Yeah, that's probably it.
What was it like? Because for me, it brought back the 80s when women wore suits.
For me, I mean, this happens to me every time I go into Value Village as well and I start trying on clothes in Value Village.
It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's a little creepy, right? The idea of putting on someone's clothing and you don't know what that other person has been through. So there's like these echoes, these memory within the suit. And specifically if you know the person who wore the suit before you is dead, then there's a whole nother sort of very kind of creepy feeling with it. Now, I'm not saying creepy is bad. Don't get me wrong. Creepy can be quite good and it's a way of sort of invigorating yourself and sort of re-energizing your psyche, which is why people like horror movies. But
there's a conversation.
Yeah, there's another one. But definitely.
I forgot to check the pockets because I was excited to see whenever I put on one of my suit jackets or my dad's suit jackets, there's always like a book of matches from some wedding and it brings back history.
And so definitely you start to embody a sense of history and blah blah blah. I mean, we can go into it a lot more, but
anyway, you should go down and visit Rob's art projects gallery. It's closing on October 17th from 5 to 7:30, but if you'd like to go down and visit Robert and have your picture taken, Wednesday through Saturday 11 to 4.
Yeah. And
1217 15th Avenue by the General Hospital.
And other openings.
Oh, my goodness. We've determined Due to the Ground is on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Dunlop Art Gallery is on Friday night.
That's right. Lisa Murray is opening at 7 o'clock at the Dunlop Art Gallery
and
in the Regina Public Library.
And Anthony Kendall, the curator, are going to be there giving a talk. And
that's
all he
sees. That's about it. Good. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Drink a lot of coffee. Bye-bye.
He doesn't ask why. He just paints the sky. Trouble with an impressionist, he looks at a log. He doesn't know who he is standing, staring at this log. And surrealist memories are too amorphous and proud. While those downtown macho painters are just alcoholic. The trouble with an impressionist. There's the trouble with an impressionist. There's the trouble with an impressionist. There's the trouble with an impressionist.
This is the Talent Pool on 90.